Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that you blow at the low knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
All men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal dignity.
And so we say to all in this nation who would dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
This is St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly in-depth look at developments affecting the education of our children.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. Peter, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good this morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Let's talk about something kind of quick that I'm certain has not made the radar or certainly not made the paper about... I think a situation or a event or non-event that kind of defines where we are politically in this city insofar as education is concerned and kind of gives us a heads up on what's coming down at us politically with respect to education. Talk to us about this event that was to take place at the America's Dome, right?
Yes, right. You're talking about the mayor's kindergarten roundup.
I think
that's what call it, kindergarten roundup. They plan an event to showcase...
Francis Slay's office
plan an event for, it's October 15th or so, it's on a weekend, middle of October, to showcase private schools in St. Louis.
Mm.
In order to, you know, for families getting ready to send their kids to school, the intent was to say, here, look at all your options other than public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And there was.
This is going to be a big deal.
It's supposed to be a big deal.
Because there are a lot of private schools in St. Louis, in the city of St. Louis.
Right. There are a lot of Catholic schools, Lutheran schools, non-denominational schools.
Mm-hmm. And also, Francis Slay has showcased his relationship with the Catholic schools.
That he has, and he's been. It's been a policy, mm-hmm. a consistent policy while he's been mayor of promoting. Private schools,
mm-hmm.
and you know he's been out with Matt Blunt campaigning for vouchers
mm-hmm.
to fund private schools to get kids out of public school and send them to private school.
Okay,
and so this really is the centerpiece of his educational policy.
Mm-hmm.
The school district found out about it in August. I don't know exactly when planning started, but certainly planning was underway
mm-hmm.
in August. And the mayor's education advisor, Robin Wabi, sent an email to somebody a week or so ago asking about it, saying it was canceled for lack of interest.
Canceled for lack of interest. Let me just try to break this down here. We had a free event for Catholic schools, Lutheran schools, private schools to showcase their schools in pursuit of city students.
Yes.
And it was free.
Yes.
It was free. And it was at the America Center.
Yes.
And it would have been promoted by the Francis Slay's office.
Yes.
And there was money to do this.
Yes.
And it was canceled from lack of interest from the private schools. What do you make of that? I mean, what conclusions can we draw from an astounding thing that, as far as I know, all the Catholic schools aren't full? They're not exactly bursting at the seam. No room at the end, so to speak.
No, they've been... closing schools for lack of enrollment and then consolidations the last couple of years. I say the most immediate thing is these schools are saying they don't want to be, you know, the alternative to public schools. They don't want to take all the public school kids.
But yet and still, this brings us to the voucher discussion. So then how do you explain the enthusiasm of these schools for vouchers, but not the enthusiasm of these schools for pursuing children without vouchers? Is it about the money or the babies?
Well, I think we'll leave that to your listeners to figure out.
This is Liz Brown, St. Louis Public Schools Watch. I'm here with Peter Downs. Stay with us. We'll be back.
If you drive a Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury and need service, there's never been a better time for great deals than right now. It's the Right Now factory-authorized service event at your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. You'll find special offers by the truckload on tires, brakes, batteries, and more, all installed by Ford factory-trained experts. Genuine parts and service at Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealerships. Hurry, the Right Now factory-authorized service event ends soon.
Hey, let's go to my house for an Ovaltine milkshake.
I love Dunkin' Ovaltine shakes. Let's go!
Isn't it snack time for the kids? Let's make them Ovaltine milkshakes.
I'll get out the ice cream and milk.
And I'll get the rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Hey, this is Mama's making Ovaltine shake.
Yes, I love her Ovaltine shake.
Yeah!
Now I'll add the rich chocolate Ovaltine.
And I'll get the glasses.
Mom, we're home!
Who wants an Ovaltine shake?
I do!
I guess we better make more.
More Ovaltine shakes, please.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Good morning, Miss Liz. This is Casey Marshall calling you from Laclede School, room 209. Miss Liz, I love that African necklace. I wore it to Red Lobster. I wish I could go with you to Ghana. Miss Liz, you are the best and one of a kind. Miss Liz, this is Casey Marshall from room 209, where dignity reigns supreme.
Hey, baby.
Have a great summer. Love you.
Love you.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back to St. Louis Public Schools Watch. Okay, we Peter, and I'm here with Peter Downs, and Peter, I'm kind of thinking about what's going on in Washington and how the truth eventually finds its way to the surface. Amidst all of the muck and the foulness and all of the fight, the truth eventually can find its way to the surface. And I'm seeing that in something that's happened in the St. Louis Public Schools. Talk to us about this.
Yes, about a little less than 2 weeks ago, the Inspector General of the Department of Education issued a report on the department's Reading First grant program.
Why does Reading First sound familiar?
Reading First is a program designed to promote reading in at-risk kids from kindergarten through third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had it's been a bone of contention here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
When William Roberti was pretending to be the superintendent 3 years ago,
Nice money if you can get it. $7 million. That's nice money.
Yep. We had a textbook committee, teachers and principals and downtown administrators and parents. They evaluated reading textbooks. And they had five or six different textbooks they'd look at. And they made a recommendation to the board that the board approved. And then Roberti said, oh, no, no, we can't do that. Because Secretary of Education's office says they won't pay for that one, that we have to use open court.
And before we go there, who is the head of the Secretary of Education?
At that time, it was Rodney Page.
Okay. And what do we know about Rodney Page? Is he connected somehow to this administration?
Yes, yes. Okay. Rod Page came out of Texas,
right.
And he was on the school board in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And there was George Bush II,
mm-hmm.
Had said Houston. Oh, he said education miracle in Houston. They've done wonderful things, and he takes Rod Page from the school board there and makes him Secretary of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've talked about on this show, and it's been on 2020 and 60 Minutes and other shows, there was no miracle in Houston.
What they did
is they came up with ways to scam the system.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did. So they just put in false figures and they said, oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Rod Page, mm-hmm. Secretary of Education, supposedly, telling
Bill
William
Roberti,
mm-hmm. Supposedly close enough friends with him, William Roberti, it might have been, saying, oh, we want to use
open court.
Mm-hmm. Now, the result of all that is that at that time, we didn't apply for Reading First grant 3 years ago. But then 6 months later, we had a new chief academic officer. Lynn Spampinato was her
mm-hmm.
name. And she came in, and her very first thing, she was here less than a week, and she went to the school board and said, I want you to ignore your bylaws. I want you to ignore your policies and adopt open court. And the reason you need to adopt open court, she says, it'll raise kids' test scores. In 2 years, test scores will go up. And we have this example from Houston.
Houston, Texas.
And we have this example from Detroit. And, they changed the test in the middle, And we have this example from Charlotte, North Carolina. And so she promised we'd see test scores rocketing in 2 years. And we know now that didn't happen. Test scores actually went down in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
But that's here in St. Louis. Turns out nationally, and the Inspector General just confirmed and issued a report that the Department of Education was telling states, you have to use this program.
This program being?
Being open court. And for Reading First even earlier, there's there's not just a teaching program, but then there's what they call the assessment program, the mm-hmm. test you give. And what the district introduced, what St. Louis introduced in the public schools, I think it was last year, was an assessment tool called the DIBLES.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to look through my notes here, but I don't remember what DIBLES stands for, but mm-hmm. everybody calls it DIBLES. And we had talked here about a lot of criticism from educators about this test
mm-hmm.
as well. But it turns out that, again, this is from the Department of Education. The person they put in charge of Reading First was someone who had promoted DIBLES in open court before he was put in charge of Reading First. And he has these panels that evaluate state grants, and he stacked them with people who were making money off of DIBLES in open court. And they found clear emails between officials of the department and the chair of this committee saying, we need to steer these states to use these programs.
Because people we know are making money off of selling these programs.
Yes.
And so if I understand this correctly, this started with Bill Roberti pushing open court.
Started here in St. Louis.
Started here in St. Louis, pushing open court. Multi-million-dollar, we're not talking about chump change here in the city of St. Louis, of what our school district paid for open court.
No, it's millions of dollars.
Multi-millions
a year.
It
was
year.
Something like $12 million to institute it, and then there are millions more every year for what they call the consumables, for the worksheets they use up every year.
So, and this is part, and we talked about this on the show also. We had this horrible racist little handouts,
yes,
that they used as part of their program, right?
That's right.
So we have tens of millions of dollars that have gone into this open court thing, and it turns out that the reason why we're spending tens of millions of dollars is because it goes all the way up to the top that they are directing school districts to buy into this program.
Yes.
And what do we know about the effectiveness and the success of this program?
We know here in St. Louis it has not been successful.
Mm-hmm.
It has not been effective.
If we can stop just for 1 second, because I want people to really understand about how one of the reasons why this program doesn't work. This is like, it's almost like teaching children to not think. Isn't that what the program is? Just to be little repeaters and mantra sayers, as opposed to any kind of thinking involved in this?
Well, I was talking to a teacher yesterday about it, who contrasted it. Open court uses something. A technique called direct instruction, which is just that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the answer, you repeat the answer back to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And she contrasted that with what's called the Socratic method, mm-hmm, after a philosopher,
mm-hmm,
a couple thousand years ago, which involves the teacher asking the students a question, then guiding their research, guiding their thinking to come up with the answer,
mm-hmm,
but where the students then come up with the answer, and then they do research to come up with the answer. So there's these two different methods about, you know, Socratic method teaches thinking,
mm-hmm,
and teaching teaches evaluating, and direct instruction is parroting the correct answer back.
Mm-hmm. So, and again, this is not rocket science. What does experience tell you about which one of those are effective teaching tools?
Well, I would say experience tells you that thinking is the effective teaching tool. But there is a big industry in education in the United States that says that we have to do more parroting to be like these, like the Asian countries, which are turning out technicians, where, as opposed to the engineers, we're turning out.
And the other piece of this is that there was not only is it this parroting back, but there's a rigidity in this program that sucks all of the other types of programs out. When they put open court here, it was open court and only open court.
Yes, I recall one teacher telling me about how when open court came in, you had people come in literally, like Nazi stormtroopers, you know, and this is an analogy I've heard of, but they came into her classroom and went through, searched every drawer, every cabinet, anything they found that was not open court, they confiscated it and they threw in the dumpster. It was like a big book burning almost.
Mm.
They just kind of, and it didn't matter if it was her personal property or not. If it was a book that was not open court, even if it belonged to the teacher, not the district, they came and they seized it and threw it away.
This happened in the city of St. Louis.
This happened in the city of St. Louis.
And so we find out that there is this connect with people wanting to make money off of this.
Yes, yes. And the publisher, the owner of the publishing company that is getting most of these contracts, is a big Republican donor. And executives of his company have high positions in the Bush administration. That's a McGraw is the family that runs it.
So where are we now with respect to getting open court out of the St. Louis public schools?
Well, we aren't anywhere with respect to getting it out of the public schools.
Mm-hmm. Is that the direction that the district is going to go in?
There hasn't been any in-depth discussion on the school board level.
Mm-hmm.
There's been instances of small discussion. There are, you know, one of the things we're faced with is the financial reality is that, you know, we're trying to, right now, to find the money to pay for bills incurred by the previous administration that they didn't pay for.
Mm.
And so it's just the financial. Can we afford to dump it and get something else? Probably not. So it's more an issue of how are we going to use it? Do you use it, you know, impose a rigid system on everybody? Or do you have something that introduces more flexibility?
But we know that that doesn't work.
We know that doesn't work, but there are board members. Board member Archibald, last board meeting, insisted we need to continue with rigid enforcement of Oakland Court.
But what does he know? He's not an educator. Doesn't
he's not
have
an educator. That's
school.
True.
I mean,
but the I think a
and he's the one that brought it in here with Ribery.
Yes. I think a practical alternative to say, well, here's a textbook resource just like any other textbook. You use it to the extent that it's helpful for you to teach. And you can use other things as well if they are more helpful for you teaching.
We'll be back. This is St. Louis Public Schools Watch. I'm here with Peter Downs. Stay with me.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Hampton on the ramp to eastbound 44. Look for an accident in the right shoulder. Southbound 44 is slowing as people merge from Bowles and once again around the Merrimack River Bridge and 270. Eastbound 40 from Timberlake Manor all the way through Hanley Road. Look for low sun glare causing some stop-and-go traffic. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 at 55 at Marshall, look for stop-and-go traffic. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79, look for slow traffic. Westbound 270 at Illinois 3, and the Canal Bridge is looking good this hour. However, westbound 270 at Illinois 3 and the Canal Bridge looks good. All your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge and into downtown, you can expect delays. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Play the newest version of the Illinois Lottery's Ticket for the Cure. 100% of the proceeds support Fight Against Breast Cancer. Buy a ticket today because when you play, everybody wins. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Friday. Partly sunny this morning, mostly cloudy this afternoon. Chance of showers with a high in the mid-80s. This evening, cooler, mostly cloudy. Low in the mid-50s. Thursday, partly cloudy, high around the upper 60s. And then on Friday, mostly clear with a high in the lower 70s. Currently, we have 73 degrees. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and Peter Downs of St. Louis Schools Watch on the award-winning Wake Up Call. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Where else, where else, where else indeed? Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, everything that you need to make your house a home. How about getting that, your yard ready for the winter? A leaf mulcher. Get on over to 3425 Union. Get it done. They have wonderful tools, wonderful sales, wonderful. I'm telling you, it's the best customer service in the state of Missouri. Get on over to 3425 Union. Sears, tell them I told you to.
Speaking about Amendment 2. Missouri native and cancer survivor, Cheryl Crow.
As a Missouri native and cancer survivor, I strongly support Amendment 2, the Stem Cell Initiative. That's why I'm joining with patient and medical groups to urge you to vote yes. Voting yes ensures that Missourians will have access to stem cell treatments that could provide cures for cancer, diabetes, Parkinson's, and many other diseases.
A yes vote on 2 is supported by over 100 nonprofit patient and medical groups, including the American Association for Cancer Research, American Diabetes Association, Society for Women's Health Research, Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research, and Missouri State Medical Association.
Please join us and vote yes on 2. It could save the life of someone you love.
This voter information paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. Sandra Ost, Treasurer.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen letting you know my show will be on every Thursday from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Yeah, I'll make you think. You may find yourself saying, oh my God, it burns, it burns. It only hurt for a minute. See you then.
Everything the engineer would move when the engineer wanted a bite to eat.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
This is, good morning, Miss Liz. This is Amir Mahoney calling you from La Crease, go. Second grade from 209, Miss Liz. I had a good time with you. Miss Liz, our class is watching Roots. Kuta Kite knows his roots. His mother name is Dita, and his father name is Amaru. Kita has dignity. Have a good summer. This is Amir Muhammad from room 209, where dignity reigns supreme. Love you.
Love you.
What a wonderful world.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back. Welcome back. My name is Liz Brown, and Peter, we were talking about, goes all the way to the top, this whole open court reading program. When we talk about this, and you were telling us about how at the top of the food chain in the United States Department of Education, the Inspector General's office has concluded that the department's officials have stacked the panels of grant reviewers with those who favored open court.
Yes.
And when we talk about this being a lucrative thing for them to do, for the people that were behind this program to do, what kind of money are we talking about?
It's about $1 billion. That's with a B, $1 billion a year, every year.
Every year they've made $1 billion off of this.
In the 5 years that they've been giving grants for this, it's been $5 billion.
Wow. And again, these are people that came out of Texas, or is there a Texas connection with this, or is it simply the connection of the people that have contributed to George Bush?
Well, Rod Paige came out of Texas, but the connection here, actually the McGraws, I think, are out of Florida.
Mm. Jeb Bush. That Bush. Okay. That Bush. So we're.
But they've been business partners of the Bushes.
They've been business.
They've been business partners of the Bushes, yeah.
Business partners of the
yes.
Bushes.
Yes.
And they've made $5 billion off of this program that is virtually unusable because it doesn't work.
It has certainly failed here in St. Louis. In addition, I've heard principals talk about. Well, I've heard principals say, you know, there's some kids. You take like a slice of kids in the middle. Who can benefit from this. They need the phonics. The program works with them. Doesn't mean other programs wouldn't work better, but there are some kids who benefit. But, yeah, kids in the bottom, this program prevents them from giving those kids the help they need to raise their literacy skills.
Well, and there are some kids that would benefit from watching Power Rangers every day at school, too. That would benefit. They would learn that way, but that doesn't mean that you tell teachers the only way that you can teach these kids is by making them watch Power Rangers all 6 hours they're in school and then paying $1 billion a year to pump the Power Rangers into the city schools.
That's right.
I mean, because there was a certain, again, rigidity that came with
yes.
this program. You can't use any other program but this program.
Right. It's really an anti-teaching program. Because
mm-hmm.
we know, you know, teachers have kids with different learning styles at different levels in their class. And it's their job. They've had professional development to know how to be flexible so they can teach different kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this program basically says, forget everything you know about teaching. You know, don't try and teach. Just read this program.
Now, how does this fit in with this policy of the Inspector General, I mean, of the department officials stacking the deck for the Friends of the Bushes to the tune of $1 billion a year? How does this comport with the fact that we have this No Child Left Behind policy that was also established by this administration?
The Inspector General's audit says that these actions are in violation of No Child Left Behind.
How so?
That they're illegal under No Child Left Behind. Said No Child Left Behind has specific provisions that prohibit the U.S. Department of Education from influencing or dictating curriculum, assessments, or instructional approaches used by schools or districts.
Now, there isn't a more clear example of dictating when you say that the only program that you can use is this open court program.
Yeah, that's pretty clear, and that's one of the things that the Inspector General really sharply criticized department officials for. And the official who's in charge of that program, you know, 9 days after the report, he resigned.
Should we be talking about or considering criminal charges in something like this?
Congressman George Miller from California has asked the U.S. Department of Justice, as has the International Reading Association. They both asked the U.S. Department of Justice to open a criminal investigation into this program.
And I wonder if there are lawsuits that could be districts could sue the Department of Education for insisting that they spend their money, their grant money, in this way. And the years of, we've had this in our district since Bill Roberti. So we could honestly say that there are students that perhaps have suffered as a result of the implementation, the forced implementation of this program.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an idea to consider. I'm not a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if there's any basis for that or not, or you know, how it's all structured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are other lawsuits around education. We thought of some of this thing where the issue comes up on whether someone has legal standing,
mm-hmm.
you know, or
right.
not. And
But in terms of the whether or not a lawsuit is successful or not, in terms of whether or not the district has suffered as a result of this experimentation, what's the conclusion? Oh, then the last, since Bill Roberti, the last 3-4 years. Has the district suffered as a result of this?
I think it definitely has. But more than the district, it's the kids who have suffered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the district got this money and then spent it. So
mm-hmm.
so if, you know, we might not have done this if we didn't get the money, but we were after the money. So, you know, the district, you could argue they really aren't out anything.
Okay.
But the children definitely, in my view, the children definitely have suffered. And we see reading levels for the children who had a couple of years of open court. Far below reading levels of the children who preceded them and were taught in other methods.
Mm. So as to the status right now, what are the teachers saying and what are principals saying in terms of their relationships with this program?
Well, I think it varies. I've certainly heard teachers really anxious to get some freedom to teach again.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard principals say that this program really handcuffs them so that they cannot really teach, you know, 2/3, 80% of the kids in their school, and they're pushing within the district for a more rational, you know, educational approach. There are also, you know, principals who came into the district under open court,
mm-hmm.
Who had never been principals anywhere before,
mm-hmm.
for whom this is how they know to run a school,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they just cling to it more tightly because this is what they know.
Mm-hmm. And Peter, this story really underscores this the current trend of going to finding gold and finding money in education. You know, like one of the things that I often say on the show is that it's easier now for corporations and people to go to these multi-million dollar money pots, billion dollars worth of money pots all over the United States, school boards,
mm-hmm.
and pull money out of school boards. We saw that happen with Bill Roberti,
yes.
when they came in and just pulled millions and millions of dollars out of our district. But looking at what they've done with this open court and what the Department of Education has done in steering this money to some friends and former business partners of George Bush, it's like, again, they found money in education for big business.
Yes, and we have another example of that coming up on the school board meeting next week.
Mm-hmm.
We have the last item on our agenda.
Mm-hmm.
is actually for after-school tutoring. It's called Supplemental Educational Services. And, you know, there's a list of companies for the school district to contract with. And this is something that the school board actually has no choice in the matter.
Mm.
The U.S. Department of Education says, yeah, we've given you, I'm just making up these numbers here, but let's say, like, we gave you $5 million, so you have to spend $1 million of it on after-school tutoring. Okay, that's fine. Then the state of Missouri says, and here's a list of companies that you have to spend the money with. We don't have any choice in who gets the money. The state of Missouri tells us you have to spend the money with these companies.
That we have put on the list.
That they have put on the list.
Uh-huh.
And we are not allowed to have any oversight. We are not allowed to, you know, we have to sign contracts with these companies without knowing how many kids they're going to claim they're tutoring. We cannot require any evidence that the kids, the students they claim come there actually show up. We cannot require any evidence that the students actually sign up for tutoring. These companies, there's discussion last night at the school board meeting with staff saying, you know, some of these companies, they offer TVs or iPods or bicycles to families to say, here, sign up with our company. And then they don't do anything. They actually get the kids there to tutor because they can bill and get paid, $1,500 per student.
All they need are names on a list. They never have to show that a body ever came through the door. They just need a name on the list.
That's right. And we have this one company on there we've discussed previously on this show, they've been very controversial because it's based around a religious approach.
And we'll talk about that, too, when we come back. This is St. Louis Public Schools Watch. I'm Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. Stay with me.
Important for African Americans to vote yes for the stem cell initiative. So many diseases that disproportionately affect our community, diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's, could be cured by stem cell research.
Dr. Consuelo Wilkins, associate professor at Washington University School of Medicine, is joining with other African American physicians and community leaders to urge a yes vote on Amendment 2, the Missouri Stem Cell Initiative.
African Americans are at high risk for certain diseases like diabetes and sickle cell disease. Stem cells could provide cures for those diseases. That's why I'm urging African Americans to vote yes on the Stem Cell Initiative to make sure that all Missourians have equal access to the same stem cell cures that are available to other Americans. Please join me in voting yes on the Stem Cell Initiative. It could save the life of someone you love.
This voter information paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. Sandra Ost, Treasurer.
This is Mark Hinderleiter, host of Lessons in Leadership. Every Friday afternoon, I interview high-level leaders about leadership issues that matter most. As far as I know, it's the only show of its kind. Whether you're an executive, manager, teacher, coach, volunteer leader, or the head of a family, this show is for you. You'll get practical tips from real leaders on topics that can give you the competitive edge in the marketplace. Tune in every Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock to Lessons in Leadership.
Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Good morning, Miss Liz.
Good morning. Who's this?
This is Dontra Busby calling you from McLean School, second grade room 209. Thank you, Miss Liz, for the gift from Africa that you gave to everyone. We are watching a movie. The movie is called Roots. In the movie, the setting is in a village called Jufurey. And Roots was voted by Alex Haley. Miss Liz, we had our Awards Day program, and I received an achievement trophy. Have a good summer. Dr. Busby from 209 for Dignity. Rise Supreme. Love you.
Love you. Thank you.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to St. Louis Public Schools Watch. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. Applied Scholastics is on the list here.
Yes, the Scientology-based program.
Now, walk us through how people get money to so-called tutorship. And we're not talking about chump change. These, and I'm using the term loosely, businesses get how much money per child?
$1,501 per child.
And you don't ever have to prove that you have a child sitting in a room anywhere tutoring them for anything?
Nope.
So if I went and I went to 15 high schools and got 47, 50, 60, 100 kids signed up for tutoring, I'd get $1,500
each. Yes.
And I don't have to show anybody that I have a facility that can accommodate 100 kids?
No, there's very little. My understanding, and there's some discussion this last night, is really anybody can go down to Jeff City, fill out a little one-page application, says I'm a tutoring service, and you know, there's very little of the application, little or no investigation, no background investigation, little or no checkup on the company. You're there. Now you got to track the kids. Right, but and that's, you know, one of the things that it was good to hear last night is a report on these, and St. Louis Public Schools does. We do compete with these companies. We try and convince the families to stick with us for tutoring and not go out to these companies. And last year, families, 1,500 students stayed with St. Louis Public Schools for tutoring. And 189 went out to these various companies, split between five companies.
Now let me get this straight. In terms of choices that the school district has, something I'm thinking back to this conversation that we had about this. I think it was a year ago. I think it doesn't Hazelwood do it in house? Do they?
Yes, and that there
now,
was.
Now, how does that work?
And you know, those 1,500 kids staying with St. Louis Public Schools are coming in-house
right. For
that as well. Hazelwood, there's I don't know if it's true. There was some discussion. There's a story that Hazelwood somehow excluded Applied Scholastics as a choice for the kids in its district.
Okay.
Because when our staff said they would look into that because they're and Bill Purdy was running the meetings, that he's talked to lawyers at Missouri State Board Association, too, and the word has always been that the school district has no choice in the matter.
Uh-huh.
So the rest of our staff is going to investigate that and find out. But so far, everything we've been told by DESE is you don't have any choice.
But so this is on the agenda for next week.
Yes.
So the investigation is going
to be quick.
Yeah, the investigation has to be awfully quick on whether or not that is true.
Yes.
So, and again, going back to how Hazelwood does it, is my recollection correct? Did Hazelwood not have any of these companies, and did they take it all in-house? How did they work it?
Well, they offered it in-house, and I don't know whether they were able to keep all their kids in-house or not. See, one of the advantages for families and students of staying in-house with the school district is the school district, like St. Louis, will provide transportation. If it's after school, you know, you stay after school for the tutoring, we'll provide transportation home. These companies do not provide transportation.
Okay.
So you got to find your own way out to their site or not. Applied Scholastics is in Hazelwood.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk to families and try and urge them.
So do they
to use your services?
So do any, because I'm looking at these companies and I haven't had a chance to count them, but it looks like there's over a dozen or so.
There are 19.
19, okay. These companies,
which is down. There were over 40 last year.
Really?
Yes. As I mentioned, only five actually got any students from St. Louis Public Schools last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say it's probably similar that you had a lot of companies that signed up last year and were unable to attract anybody.
How do you, as a tutoring company, you get three students. That's $1,500 a year. $1,500 each time they tutor them.
$1,500 a year.
A year for each student.
Yes.
So you get three students. That's only $3,000.
That's $4,500. Yeah.
Okay. So a little over $3,000. Math major, I am not. And we don't know anything about the backgrounds of these businesses. When you're given these names, are you given the backgrounds of these businesses or just the names?
No, we're given we get like a page description of each business.
Can I, as a citizen, go in and ask for the page description of that?
Yes, yes, okay. And you can get it from DESE and Jefferson City, too. In fact, I think they have it on the website.
Okay.
It's not very much information. It really isn't. You know, it says something says gives their address and where the corporate headquarters is, and says what they do tutoring in, because there's some programs tutoring in, you know, reading and writing. There's some programs tutoring in math. There's some programs that tutor in everything. Yes.
What about a Sylvan Learning Center type of a place? Could they, as a business,
last year they were on the list last year.
They're not on the list.
They're not on the list this year.
Why do you suppose that is?
I think what was reported to us last night, that somebody ran down some of them, and I think they had like 5 students last year. So I think it's just for them. It wasn't, you know, they didn't make any money off of it. They established some offices. You have staff and 5 students. Doesn't pay for that.
Wow. Okay, so we have a few more minutes here. Let's go, because we're looking at right now the list of the...
Well, let me say something about main school applications,
okay,
since we do have just a few minutes left. The St. Louis Public Schools are accepting applications now for main schools.
And this is early.
This is early. This is a couple months earlier than in the past.
Okay.
The deadline for... six schools. The deadline for Kennard, McKinley Metro, Central Cleveland, Gateway, and Soldan, that's 7 schools, is Friday, December 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And the deadline for all other main schools is December 29th.
Okay. All right. So put that on your calendar.
Yeah, this is early. They intend to, they'll have the lottery January 15th, and the first notices to families will go out on February 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And this is... you know, it's part of the new reality of we are competing with charter schools and we are competing with private schools.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some families, which fit, everybody gets to have a choice with charters. There are some families that make that choice and say, well, it's magnet school, or if I can't get my children in the magnet, I'm going to put them in a charter.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we know, you know, we on this show know mm-hmm. charters perform worse than public schools. They've advertised themselves as private schools,
mm-hmm.
right? And so...
Free private schools.
It's free private schools.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, private schools, a lot of them have a March 1st deadline. They say, if you want your space next year, you got to pay us, you know, X hundreds of bucks by March 1st to reserve that space.
Which makes it even more inexplicable, Peter, going back to the very first conversation that we had this morning about this. What was Francis's name of this program that he was going to have?
The Kindergarten Roundup.
Kindergarten Roundup.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. And, you know, nobody there that Francis Slay was going to have this showcasing of all these private schools for free to get city kids to apply to their schools. And their application process is as deadline sensitive as well, and there wasn't any interest from private schools to get city kids as part of their enrollment. You know, that's just wild. So in terms of this magnet enrollment piece, what do parents have to do?
They should call downtown, call the recruitment and counseling office
mm-hmm.
at St. Louis Public Schools and ask for an application.
Mm-hmm.
I think applications...
Can you get them online?
I don't think they're available online yet. I think the application is being redone, and I think they'll be sent out. You know, families can request them now, and I think they're going to be mailed in 2 weeks.
Okay.
They're waiting until they got a bunch of requests lined up and the
mm-hmm.
new things printed.
Okay, so they mail out the applications, and then you just fill the application out and mail them back.
And mail it back.
And then the lottery takes place on January 15th.
Yes,
that's my birthday. So, and Martin Luther King's birthday. So that's an easy date to remember. Easy date to remember. January 15th. Very good. And the deadline for mailing them in is 2 deadlines.
There are 2 deadlines. It's simpler just remember one. If you mail it in by December 15th, you're okay for every school.
Okay, very good. December 15th. Now, we have a school board meeting next week.
Yes, there is.
Okay, some items that are on the consent agenda that we should be looking at. Anything in particular? Because what I'm noticing here is that it seems like that there's doesn't seem to be as much on the consent agenda as we've seen in the past. What's up with that?
Maybe that there's a lot of stuff that was hammered down and nailed down and we can't change it. But several of these items on the consent agenda are contracts with people required under grants, but to evaluate different programs we have going on, grant-funded programs at St. Louis Public Schools.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that the school board meeting again is Tuesday?
Tuesday, the 10th, 7 p.m. at Carr Lane School.
And
there will probably be a special meeting earlier, I don't know, 6:30, really discussing the benefit plans for employees and retirees.
Very good. And this issue of the applied scholastics, the board is looking into that?
The board is looking into that.
All right. Very good. And let me see. Questions that parents had about overcrowding and what was going on in Vashon? Have we had any resolution at
the, well, overcrowding, the reality is we have large classrooms this year. We have hundreds more teachers than the former superintendent wanted the budget for. So it's mind-boggling how large they would have been if we had followed his recommendation. But we do have large classes, and that's just a reflection of the financial condition of the district that we have to solve.
Oh, I know one more question that someone had a couple of weeks ago about the buses not having turning their heat on. And kids getting on the buses when they were cold. Did we do some follow-up on that?
I've not heard any more on that.
Okay.
This week, I'm sure that hasn't been a problem.
Right. Okay, but let's have an answer for that for next week.
Okay.
Or you're not going to be here next week.
I'm not going to be here next week. That's
following
correct.
Week. The following okay. week. Thank you, Peter. See you in the following week.
All right. See you in 2 weeks.
All right. Take care.
The common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
Issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. They know they'll never get all of their questions answered, but police in Lancaster County are learning more about what made Charles Roberts do the unthinkable this week. Shoot up a one-room schoolhouse in the heart of Pennsylvania Dutch country. Five girls were killed. More from ABC's Stephen Portnoy in Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania.
Police spent the day with the shooter's family, hoping to learn more about what Charles Carl Roberts may have done to his two younger relatives 20 years ago. Police can't confirm it yet, but Roberts told his wife he molested the two when they were 3 and 5 years old. Roberts said he had dreamt of molesting again. Police believe that was his intention here. Stephen Portnoy, ABC News, Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania.
Thousands attended a prayer vigil for the five girls last night. The first funerals are set for tomorrow. We've learned a lot about former Florida Congressman Mark Foley in the last 24 hours. He's gay, says he was sexually assaulted by a Catholic priest when he was a teenager. And now more experts are saying Foley's racy emails to teenage pages could cost his party the House.
The Democrats are really on the offensive on this issue. I've talked to Democrat and Republican strategists. They think this is all could have already given them 10 to 12 of the 15 seats they need, and they're going to continue to press this with ads, with radio addresses, with calls for Republicans to return Mark Foley's money straight up to Election Day.
ABC News chief investigative correspondent George Stephanopoulos. Well, these men listened to their parents, stayed awake in science class, and it's paid off.
Americans are 3 for 3 in Nobel Prizes, the award for chemistry going to Professor Roger Kornberg of Stanford University for his work in copying genetic information. Reached on the phone, Kornberg said he didn't do it alone.
There are many people around the world who have done the work that forms the basis for ours.
But with the prizes for medicine, physics, and now chemistry going to Americans, the U.S. has proved itself a scientific superpower. Linda Alban, ABC News, London.
This is ABC News.
Ever wonder how Columbus felt when he discovered America? Now you can at Lowe's Discover Columbus Day Values event. Right now, all special order flooring is 20% off. Get a $5 mail-in rebate on 1 gallon or a $20 mail-in rebate on 5 gallons of Olympic Premium paint. Put it all on your Lowe's consumer credit card and ask for 12 months special financing on any purchase of $299 or more now through October 9th. See store for details. Hurry into Lowe's to discover Columbus Day Values you won't find anywhere else. Lowe's, let's build something together.
At Romano's Macaroni Grill.
You know how I discover things you guys miss?
Exactly.
Like this sausage stuffed cannelloni with its layers of flavors. Never had it before, have you?
Well, it's brand new. Italian sausage, homemade meat sauce, melted cheese.
Your pasta Milano? I discovered that.
Tender chicken, garlic cream sauce. I get it here all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a Mac Grill classic.
But I discovered it first. I'm a discoverer. Like Marco Polo.
Well, you're old enough.
From pasta Milano to new sausage stuffed cannelloni, discover the many flavors of Romano's Macaroni Grill.
A major ruling by the National Labor Relations Board could mean some big changes in the nation's workforce, maybe even in your job. ABC's Richard Cantu explains.
In a case from Michigan, the board voted 3-2 that nurses permanently assigned to run hospital shifts should be considered supervisors and thus exempt from union protections. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce says the ruling offers employers a good, clear standard on which workers are supervisors. But AFL-CIO President John Sweeney says the ruling will embolden employers to strip millions of workers of their union rights by reclassifying them as supervisors in name only. Richard Cantu, ABC News.
Now, ladies, here's something to drink, too. A new study says moderate drinking is good for you. In fact, women who do so are usually in better health than teetotalers. However, moderate drinking is the key here. And if you're wondering what that means, it's no more than 2 ounces of hard liquor, 2 beers, or 2 glasses of wine a day. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
This WGNU News report is brought to you by Tahiti Village. I'm Peyton Colston. Checking the news this morning, Friday marks the fourth anniversary of an 11-year-old Washington County boy's disappearance. Sean Hornbeck was last seen riding his mountain bike in his hometown of Richwoods October 6th of 2002. Charles Pickett, a senior case manager for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, says there's still hope after all this time that Sean will be found alive. 1 in 6 children have been reunited with their families since the program's inception in 1984. Anyone with information about Sean's disappearance is urged to call the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. That number is 1-800-THE-LOST. Elsewhere, a sudden high demand for blood is leading the American Red Cross to put out a call for more blood donors. Barnes Jewish Hospital called on the Red Cross Missouri-Illinois Blood Services region to supply more than 100 units of blood yesterday for 2 patients with aneurysms. For information on where to donate or to make an appointment, call 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. State Auditor Clara McCaskill will release the results of an audit of the Robinwood West Community Improvement District. Residents covered by the district asked for the audit in a petition. McCaskill will release her findings in a public meeting tonight at 7 at the Robinwood West Community Improvement District Community Building. Finally this hour, doctors from Planned Parenthood of the St. Louis region are undergoing training to learn how to implant a new birth control medication. Mary Kogut, Planned Parenthood's Vice President of Patient Services, says Implanon is a matchstick-sized rod implanted into the woman's arm that releases a hormone that prevents pregnancy for 3 years. She says the medication must be inserted by a trained professional. And that's an update of WGNU News brought to you by Tahiti Village. Why haven't you called Tahiti Village yet? You've heard Tanya Roberts on the radio offering couples complimentary 3 days, 2 nights hotel in Las Vegas, so call today. 877-57-VEGAS, 877-57-VEGAS. I'm Peyton Colston, reporting WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the Gateway Clean Air Program. Eastbound 44 at Moretz. Overpass, there's a report of an accident, and well, only right lane's getting by, and traffic is slowing near Antire Road. Eastbound 40 at Broomstick, Handle, and Hanley, look for slow traffic in pockets. Northbound 270 at Sappington and Marshall, stop and go traffic there. Eastbound 70 at KN, 79, slow traffic. Westbound 40 at Hampton and Hanley, slow traffic as well. Northbound 170 at the Galleria and Olive, look for slow traffic around the construction. And all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect some delays as the final morning rush gets through. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Gateway Clean Air Program. Gateway Clean Air Program, reminding motorists that the check engine light is the vehicle's way of saving its time for checkup. GatewayCleanAir.com. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Friday. Partly sunny this morning, mostly cloudy, a 40% chance of showers this afternoon with a high in the mid-80s. This evening cooler, mostly cloudy, low in the mid-50s. Thursday, mostly cloudy in the morning, partly sunny throughout the day with a high only in the upper 60s. And Friday, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 70s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 73 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 73 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You want to know the depth of the world that we find ourselves, that the depth of the depravity of the world that we find ourselves in, a number of things. There are a number of stories that I just really need to get out to you all. I need to talk to you all about this Mark Foley case. But I need to talk to you about it in a different way. Because we are in some messed up. We are in a messed up place. Mark Foley, MAF-54, is preying on our children, sexually preying on our children. He's a pedophile. But we have to make the connect of, it's not just Mark A. Foley praying on our babies. On Monday, did you know on Monday, on the same day that we're talking about the perversion of the pedophile support that pedophiles receive from the Republican-dominated Congress and Senate, on Monday, 263 people died in Iraq. 263 people died in Iraq. The bloodiest day in Iraq. 263 people died. It is. I would say it's spinning out of control, but it's so far beyond that. It's so far beyond spinning out of control. And how do the Republicans try to get us? They try to lie to us. They lie to us in big ways and small ways. Big ways, there are weapons of mass destruction, and Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11, and there's going to be a big nuclear mushroom cloud, and I didn't know anything about the warnings about planes being used in these buildings. The big lies. The big lies that cause us to die in big, real ways. And the little lies. The little lies on Fox News Network. On Fox News Network, when they put on the O'Reilly factor, the O'Reilly factor, they showed Mark Foley. Then they put in parentheses, you know how they always put for whether you're where you are, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, and what states you're from. When on the O'Reilly show, they put Mark Foley parentheses Democrat, Florida. Did you hear what I just said? On the O'Reilly show, after Mark Foley's name, the pedophile Republican, they put Democrat, Florida. Huh. Big lies and little lies. Big lies and little lies. And we all suffer. We all suffer. They will lie every chance they get. And you want to hear some, you want to hear some lies and some equivocations and some spin doctoring going on? I want you to hear what the attorney for MAF 54, Mark Foley, pedophile Republican from the state of Florida. Who else? Who's the governor of the state of Florida? That would be Jeb Bush, wouldn't it? Huh. Stay with me.
Finally, Mark Foley wants you to know that he is a gay man.
You don't have to travel all the way to the...
ConnectCare, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in every Friday at 5:15 for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to, and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage from your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons at 5:15 on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. Howard, hit me with this. Hit me with the line of lies. Hit me with the extraordinary line of lies from the attorney representing. Now, the spin doctor that is representing the Republican pedophile, Mark Foley.
Mark voluntarily entered a substance abuse and mental health facility on Sunday at approximately midnight Eastern time. I was there, and he will be there for at least 30 days. Mark explicitly reaffirms his acceptance of responsibility and remorse.
But he's in treatment.
He reiterates unequivocally that he has never had sexual contact with a minor.
I did not have sex with
this
that 16-year-old.
Was Mark's, as was his decision to resign from the United States House of Representatives. This was a life decision, not a tactical one made by others.
Now here are the tactics.
Specifically, Mark is asked that you be told that between the ages of 13 and 15, he was molested by a clergyman.
Tactic one.
He very much wanted to release the name of the individual, the church affiliation, and other details, but was advised by civil counsel to delay that decision pending his completion of treatment after Mark has had an opportunity to consult with counsel.
Tactic two.
Finally, Mark Foley wants you to know that he is a gay man.
Tactic three. This is not tactical. This is not spin. This is a Mark Foley taking responsibility for what I did. The devil made me do it. No spin there. No spin there. No tactics there. None at all. None at all. Look over there. Look over there. Look over there. 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And if you want to email me, you can do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. That's revolution@lizbrown.com. And fax me at 454-6609. And don't forget, we have our International Urban Institute meeting on Saturday from 9 to 11. The address is 1020 North Taylor. You need to be there. Car phone.
Liz Brown.
Fella on the car phone.
Hey, now, you know, they could have saved us all of this information, Liz. They should have just borrowed from the Book of Swagger. And said, I said that couple with some crocodile tears and we'd have been through with this.
No, not this time. Not this time. I did not have sex with those 16-year-old boys.
Man,
all we need is a finger wag, and it's like delicious irony. Delicious. I did not have sex with them. Huh? Huh?
This is so sad. I'm swearing
This is God don't like ugly stuff.
This is par for the course for George Bush and the rest of them folks up there to call themselves being in charge.
And moral majority. This is God doesn't like ugly stuff. This is karma stuff. This is coming full circle. Here you are holding yourself out to be more moral than any other administration in the history of administrations. And here we have the Speaker of the House hiding from the American public that there's a pedophile congressperson running after children and attempting to have sex with them.
It's scandalous.
Oh, it's but it also is definitive. Where is Jim Talent on asking for or demanding that Hassard step down?
You ain't heard a word from him.
Ain't heard boo. Why? Because George Bush says I'm down with this. Whatever. Jim Talent is me too. George Bush says yes. Jim Talent, me too.
I know that's right. And, you know, Liz, get past Mr. Foley. Can I ask you a question about these so-called videos that seem to be popping up all of a sudden? 2001, we're showing Muhammad Atta in a beard with another hijacker.
Muhammad Atta alive or dead?
I've heard he's alive. His father says he's alive. And his father also said that those new videos are fake. Now what? 2001? And if you're just now seeing it right before the election? Come on, fellas.
It's election time. You can set your clock by it. Every election, you will see a new video of somebody that this administration is calling a terrorist.
This happened. We're going to prove this. We don't care what y'all think. It happened.
Well, no, I know. You know what? It's not even that. I think that the reason why this one was shown was to show them smiling and to give the implication of how happy they were to kill us.
And they always have the video of Al-Qaeda all getting together and having a party. But no sound.
There you go. There you go.
Come on.
There you go.
Anything.
Thanks for your call.
Have a good one.
1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Do we have any outrage from any Democrats, Howard? I'm not trying to hear Nancy Pelosi. Let me hear somebody else. What's that other guy that we have some outrage from? Because that's really how we need to measure this. We need to measure the importance of this story, the significance of this story, against what the Democrats are pushing on it. And so I want to hear a Democrat from New Jersey? New Jersey. Let's hear a Democrat from New Jersey talk about this. Bill Pascrell.
So we're talking about transparency. We're talking about power. Mm-hmm. People think they can do whatever they want to do. And this administration has done that. You know, you can do whatever you do. This is how you govern.
Do whatever you
do. I don't think we're at that point yet. But this goes to the top. There needed to be a full investigation, and there wasn't. This is goes to the very heart of ethics and morality right on the floor of the House of Representatives.
People need to lose their jobs. People need to lose their jobs. Dennis Hassert cannot be Speaker of the House. Dennis Hassert should not be a congressman. He stood silent while a pedophile congressman went after little boys, went after babies. This man was going after a baby so hard that at a point where he was supposed to be voting on the floor of Congress, he got off the floor of Congress to go have some hot sex conversation with a child. With a child. Oh, and by the way, this is the same Mark Foley that's voted yes for torture. He's cool. He's cool with torture. Let's hear what a majority leader, conflict of interest, making money off of my position as a Senate leader. Listen, when Bill Frist talks, listen to see if he asks for leadership to step down. Listen to see if he asks for those in leadership to be punished. Listen to see if he goes after Dennis Hassert the way that he went after Bill Clinton. And make note of the time. He only has 6 seconds worth of a conversation that he wants to even say about this. Check it out.
If Mark Foley did what was said or what was alleged initially, it is to be condemned, and there should be zero tolerance for that.
What does that mean? What the heck does that mean? And notice the stuttering of the 6 seconds worth the conversation. Now remember, this is the top dog in the most powerful 100 people in the United States of America club. This is, now understand, this is a congressman. Mark Foley is a congressman who everybody has read his messages. He has stepped down and taken ownership of the fact that he wrote those messages to these babies. There is no question about what Mark Foley said. There's no question about what he said. And what does the Senate Republican majority leader stutter us through for 6 seconds? Check it out.
if Mark Foley did what was said or what was alleged initially, it is to be condemned and there should be zero tolerance for that.
What does that mean? Zero tolerance? Then give us some examples. Zero tolerance? What does that mean? You state the obvious. You mean that there we could have considered having partial tolerance for that? What does that mean? It means nothing. They have this Republican moral majority has no morality at all. It should be condemned. What he should be saying is, I read this stuff. I am sick and beyond description. This is the foulest thing that I've ever heard. Our children are at risk, and he should be buried under a building somewhere. That's the voice of moral outrage. You know what? I'm going to go get what Bill Frist said about Terri Schiavo. And listen to a compare and contrast that he had about this brain-dead woman who nobody asked to come, but that was a private matter between a family. And see if he has the same type of enthusiasm or same number of words when he discussed Terri Schiavo. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your local RE/MAX office. Eastbound 44 at Merritt's Overpass, there's a report of an accident. Only two right lanes are getting by, and traffic slows near Antire. Southbound 55 at 61, look for an accident reported. Northbound 270 at Gravoy and Marshall Road, look for stop-and-go traffic. Eastbound 78K and 79 slow. And northbound 170 at Galleria Parkway and Olive, look for slow due to construction there. Eastbound 44 from Murdoch to the River de Pere, look for heavy volume going on. And all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect delays. Also northbound Kings Highway at 40, look for an injury accident involving a vehicle that went into the water in Forest Park. And Kings Highway at West Florissant, there's also a report of an accident. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by RE/MAX. Looking to buy or sell a home? Search with RE/MAX at RE/MAX.com. They have millions of listings and outstanding agents, so you will have outstanding results. Visit them today at RE/MAX.com. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, look forward to partly sunny skies this morning, then mostly cloudy throughout the day with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. In the afternoon, a high in the mid-80s. For Thursday, cooler, mostly cloudy in the morning. Partly sunny by the afternoon with a high in the upper 60s. And for Friday, look forward to mostly sunny skies with a high in the lower 70s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 73 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 74. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Looking for Cards playoff tickets? Then log on to WGNU.net. AM 920 has teamed up with Tickets Now to help you find all the Cards playoff tickets you want. WGNU.net, for the tickets that matter most to you.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else, where else, where else indeed? Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, everything that you need to make your house a home, your home a palace, everything magical at your home. 3425 Union, that's 3425 Union. Sears, customer service extraordinaire. Deals extraordinaire. Items extraordinaire. Get on down to Sears at 3425 Union. Tell them I told you to.
Hi, this is Connie Mitchell, co-host of Women Inspiring Women's Authors on the Air. Each Friday, my co-host Liz Tanz and I explore the world of writing and interview local and not-so-local authors. We discuss relevant, timely, and occasionally controversial subjects. So come hear just what it takes to write a book and learn something new along with us. Who knows? You might find a new favorite author. That's Authors on the Air, Fridays from 1 to 2 on AM 920 WGNU.
Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Speechless. See, I don't.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. Get up, and get to me. We have much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Get up, get to me. Patricia.
Yes.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm outstanding.
Good. I have a question, Liz, about my son being expelled from Parkway South High. He's missed his entire freshman year for suspensions. It's going to be a long story, so I don't know exactly where to start, and I was wondering if you could give me some advice on this.
Well, this sounds like a conversation that needs to be had off the air.
Yes.
All right. Well, then I'm going to put you on hold and let you get that information of where you can contact me.
Okay. Thank you.
1-877-920-WGNU. You're on the wake-up call.
Yeah, how you doing, Liz?
I'm outstanding.
You still have that number for Charles Rangel?
I can get it.
Yeah. I mean, where is he at on this issue?
He's absolutely.
Speak out on behalf of the president, what about on behalf of the children?
That's right.
And then also, is this guy saying, his lawyer saying he's a gay pedophile, or what is he saying?
Well, I mean, my question is that what does his sexual orientation have to do with this?
Exactly. Why? I'm thinking he's trying to throw something light off as it isn't bad as it seems, but the kid's still, he's still a kid.
So would you say if your client was heterosexual that my client is a heterosexual? And that my client has attractions towards people of the opposite sex. That's ridiculous. Why would you say that? So why are they saying that he's gay?
Trying to sue their base, basically. That's all I'm
That's exactly what that is. That's exactly what that is.
Can I ask you a question about the school uniforms? I was told that sometimes if the kids don't have their uniforms that they're sending back home. But I would think that maybe they could, instead of sending the kids back home, maybe they could put them in some type of detention or something. Because some of the kids can't get the uniforms.
Why would you send a child home that doesn't have a uniform on?
I mean,
why would you do that?
The
kids are supposed to be educated. Why would you send them home? There are other ways of disciplining children than sending them home for crying out loud.
Exactly.
You send them home for the most egregious of circumstances. Why would you send them home for not having a uniform on?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense at all. And listen, I'll say this real quick about the Bob Whitman book. Now, I thought I had gained some respect for Colin Powell, but I've learned that I thought he resigned, but I've heard he was forced out.
But why didn't he tell anybody that?
Exactly. Why wouldn't, I thought he left on his own because he was fed up with what was going on. And then with Condoleezza Rice, was saying Donald Rumsfeld didn't respect her enough to return her phone calls. The president had to make him return her phone call. I mean, then she gets on and said, that's ridiculous. That's absurd. I mean, is it okay just to sell your soul and I don't know.
There are, throughout our history, there have been all kinds of people that have sold their souls for far less.
I mean, and I guess they live happily ever after. I don't know.
No, that's, when you sell your soul, I don't know a single story of selling the soul, living happily ever after. I'm not familiar with that story.
But they do it every day. The people do
they don't live happily ever after. I don't know anybody that Nixon didn't live happily ever. He was an angry old man, old man when he shuffled off his mortal coil. No, you don't live happily ever after. Never allow yourself to think that. These are people that do drugs. These are people that don't sleep at night. These are people that don't have relationships with other people. These are people that die lonely, bitter, angry lives.
Yeah.
So you don't live happily ever after. That's a contradiction in term. What they think doesn't really matter, does it?
It does.
I mean, the reality of it is that when you sell your soul, there is no happily ever after.
Okay.
Bottom line. All right. 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. You want to know some other things that are being done under the cover of darkness? There may not be a text message path for this, but I want you to feel this. I want you to feel this. Right now, while we're speaking, because we're in this war, right? And we have Republicans out here that love the vets, right? And they will fight you if you try to say something bad about a soldier. They have made in China support our troops over all metal parts of everything that they own, right? Then explain this to me. All of you veterans out there that are listening to me, all over the world, when you have a question about your VA benefits, about your case, there's a number that you call based upon the region where you live. These calls are handled by VA employees that have been trained weeks and weeks and weeks, years and years and years, to be able to handle and address every single call that comes in from the tens of thousands of calls that they get over the course of a day all over this country. Well, there's been some gift being handed out, and you won't hear this story anyplace else but here. A company by the name of Pearson Government Solutions was given, in 1 week, total control, all phone calls for education issues, and possibly all issues for all veterans. It's been given out to this Pearson Government Solution, a private corporation. Did you know this? Number one, they're not trained to answer these questions. And number two, they are going to be given all access to your files. Did you know that? This private company is going to be given all access to your veteran file. Now, not in the hands of the VA any longer. In the hands of this VA contract company, Pearson Government Solutions. Did you know that? Did you know that? And you got to ask the question of how can you tell me how much you care about me as a veteran? That you would willy-nilly, because these are veterans that are calling up about very serious questions. Some of them are health questions. Some of them are educational benefit questions. And this government, the unbeknownst to us citizens out here, has contracted away this responsibility. All phone calls, and this is for millions of veterans out here. All of these are going to one contractor, Pearson Government Solutions. For 90 days. You gotta wonder, why would this contract be handed out for 90 days? How much money is this contractor getting to mess around, muck around, dabble in the lives of our veterans out here? Is this some way to get our veterans into some kind of public database, private database? For 90 days, Pearson Government Solutions is going to have all access to all your files. Veterans, who you going to support come election time? Who you going to support come election time? My name is Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call. We have much business to tend to. 1-877-920-WGNU. Rudy.
How you doing this morning, Liz?
I am outstanding.
I just thought you should know that conservative talking heads on the other stations, they're tired of talking about Foley now.
Of course they're tired of it.
You know, they never miss an opportunity to always bring up Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, always.
But this is exhausting work. This means that they have to talk about themselves.
Okay. And they always want to talk about how fair and balanced they are. They'll spend 8 years talking about a Democrat, but they don't want to spend a week talking about Dick Cheney shooting his friend in the face after a drunken stoop. They don't want to talk about the debacles of the war with Donald Rumsfeld. They don't want to talk about this Foley incident when this is appalling. Everybody should, like you said, everybody should be outraged. Anybody who knew anything about this should be brought to task. It's unbelievable. But
no, Rudy, let's be clear. Anybody that knew anything about this and didn't do anything about this should
right.
lose their jobs. Let's be clear.
I'm
not
sorry.
Brought to task. They should lose their jobs.
Immediately.
They should step down for the morality of this country. This is a violation of their congressional oath.
Okay.
This is a violation of their congressional oath.
What's his name, Dennis Hastert, one of his constituents said he told him about this before.
What?
And now Hastert has this selective amnesia that he doesn't remember the conversation.
But let's dissect that for 1 second, Rudy. You're saying that it didn't stick in your mind that one of your fellow congresspeople was pursuing a pedophile? That you couldn't hold that in your head, then you need to leave for that reason.
Incompetence.
No, that is, you've got no problem with pedophiles in Congress. You got to go.
Time to leave.
Step down from your job as congressman.
And they tired. Now, don't forget, Liz, they're tired of talking about it.
And do you know on Fox, on the O'Reilly show?
Yes, ma'am.
They put Mark Foley's name up there, and then they put in parentheses, Democrat from Florida.
Yeah, I was listening to you on my way home.
Ain't that some stuff?
I was listening to you on my way home.
Ain't
that
some stuff?
I almost hit another car.
Ain't that some stuff? All right, Rudy.
Democrat, okay.
Thanks for your call. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me.
Not since the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s can I think of any bigger initiative that will empower African Americans to have control over their life than the stem cell initiative.
Dr. Michael DeBon, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Washington University School of Medicine, explains why medical experts, faith leaders, and community leaders urge a yes vote on Amendment 2, the Missouri Stem Cell Research and Cures Initiative on the November state ballot.
Diabetes, sickle cell disease, hypertension. These are the type of diseases that occur in our families, in our community. Stem cell research could lead to cures for those diseases and many others. Please join me in voting yes on the Stem Cell Initiative to ensure that all Missourians will have equal access to future stem cell cures. Thank you.
This voter information paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures, Sandra Oss, Treasurer.
We all know the scenario. You see a for sale sign and think, I want to invest, but real estate is complicated. Well, help is here. Hi, I'm Lorraine Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land of the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
We're the host of WGNU's newest show, Let's Get Wealthy. Our show provides real techniques for the everyday consumer on how to own a home and build wealth.
Tune in to Let's Get Wealthy every Wednesday at 11 a.m. because today is the day to get wealth for yourself. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis. Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net,
The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Woo! I got something I want to talk about. Y'all let me hear. The time has come to air my feelings. Yeah. There's just so much confusion going down. I'm not the kind to be complaining. But sometimes you got to stand out from the crowd. Everyone got their own opinion. And you know, I sure got mine. It's my way.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Howard, I got to have some more of that attorney from Mark Foley. I got to, this spin that is going on out here. Mark Foley is a pedophile. Mark Foley is a perverted man. Mark Foley pursues our most vulnerable, our children. And the Republican majority says it's okay with them. The Republican majority, Dennis Hatcher, the Speaker of the House, the highest office in the United States Congress. The Speaker of the House, Dennis Hassert, said that so untroubled, so unmoved, so untouched was he by the story about Mark Foley that he was pursuing babies, that he couldn't even keep it holding in his head. He couldn't even hold that story in his head. That's the spin from, Dennis Hassert. You want to hear the connected spin from Mark Foley's attorney? Just listen to this nonsense.
Mark explicitly reaffirms his acceptance of responsibility and remorse. He reiterates unequivocally that he has never had sexual contact with a minor.
I did not have sex with those children.
This decision was Mark's, as was his decision to resign from the United States House of Representatives.
It had nothing to
this
do with
this.
This
was a
it
life
had
decision,
nothing to do with
not
it.
A tactical one made by others.
It had nothing to do with the emails. It had nothing to do with the text messages.
Specifically, Mark is asked that you be told that between the ages of 13 and 15, he was molested by a clergyman.
Tactic one.
He very much wanted to release the name of the individual, the church affiliation, and other details, but was advised by civil counsel to delay that decision pending his completion of treatment after Mark has had an opportunity to consult with counsel.
Tactic two. And the trifecta is, drum roll please.
Finally, Mark Foley wants you to know that he is a gay man.
Dun, dun, dun. So you know, and I'm going to give you a heads up, and you can say that you heard it on the Wake Up Call first. What is the closer on this? What's the final seal, that the final step, that we know that this Republican pedophile protecting majority is in true spin control of this story? They're on true spin patrol. I'm going to tell you, the name of the Catholic pedophile priest that molested Mark Foley, or MAF54, you know what his name is? What do you bet? Willie Horton. Willie Horton. They will throw every single one of their tools into this. Every single. They got your gay bashing. They got your alcoholic thing up in there. They even threw in the new one of mental illness. Then they threw in the one of the Catholic priest. And all they need is a black man. And then their work is done. 1-877-920-WGNU, 1-877-920-WGNU. What is his name? Robert Novak, who released the name of Valerie Plame to the world. What is this moral? What does this Republican who just made a living out of, he made an OJ living out of Monica Lewinsky. What does Robert Novak have to say? Does anybody have to step down in Robert's and Bobby's world? What does Bobby have to say?
The fact is that this stuff was sloshing around Capitol Hill. It was in the newspapers in Florida. It wasn't exactly a closely guarded secret.
This stuff would be what? Wait a minute, before you go anywhere else, Howard. This stuff, Bobby, would be what? The third prong of the Mark Foley spin job. That would be the gay thing. That's what's been sloshing around in the papers, because surely Robert Novak is not saying that it's been sloshing around in the papers in Florida that he's a pedophile. So it's the third prong of the Mark Foley spin job. Okay, Bobby, what else you got? What else you got, Bobby?
The leadership was so oblivious to all this when they should have been trying to talk Mr. Foley out of running instead of into running.
Okay. Let's deconstruct Robert Novak's second set of comments. First, he threw out the gay thing. Okay. That's the first response. I understand that instinctively. Go to gay bashing. You are a Republican and conservative and a Bush defender. So the second piece is that y'all should have been thinking about this strategically in the majority. He should have been told not to run for office. Huh? Your first response was, we need to put him in jail for being a pedophile. That wasn't the first response. The first response wasn't, we need to call this boy's parents and make sure that the kid's okay. Wasn't that response? The first response from the Republican majority was, please make certain that we can get somebody in that seat to win so that we can keep our majority. That's the Republican response to the pedophile keeping our seat. Second only to, he's gay. Enough said. Saying.
Good morning.
Good morning. Make my ears sweat.
You know something? I think it's an insult to homosexuals to suggest that he is out here trying to sexually get to know young men because he's a homosexual.
That is correct.
And I think the research will hold up and stand up to the fact that most homosexuals have never had contact with children.
Well, wait a minute. Let's be clear. Every person that wants to talk about a gay person pursuing being a pedophile knows more heterosexual pedophiles. Okay? Knows of more heterosexual pedophiles. Come on. How many of us know about teachers when I was in high school, there were teachers that were male teachers that were going after 16-year-old little girls.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pedophile all day long.
There you go. They're going to twist it and try to rename it.
That's right. It's about wanting to.
They're going to put some new words in the dictionary like Bush did. Truthiness.
No, it was. No. Well, actually, it was Colbert that came up with that phrase to describe the truthiness of George Bush. Of George Bush. You know, I mean, the fact of the matter is that this is about a 54-year-old man attempting to have sex, pursuing, preying upon a 16-year-old child, period, dot.
And no one's mentioning the legal charges. What about contributing to the immorality and delinquency of a minor?
Trying to get him to drunk? Trying to get them through. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
They're not addressing that. Well, I'm going to sit back and watch this soap opera unwind because it's going to be very, very interesting.
It's going to be very interesting.
Yes, it is.
Thank you,
you
so
have a
much.
Great day.
Take care of yourself. 1-877-920-WTGNU. Let me see. George Bush's baby brother, Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida, the road dog of Mark Foley. What he has some comments too. Do you think any of them say that Republicans need to step down from office? Check it out.
No, not at all. I mean, Mark Foley was a hardworking guy. He was very energetic. He was an unbelievable candidate and very enthusiastic. And you know, I didn't have any inkling that he had these issues.
Huh? We have another one. We have another one.
You know, there's a guy with thousands of dollars in his freezer, Duke Cunningham, showing abject disrespect for the office that he held, and Mark Foley even worse. So I don't know what it is. It's disgusting is what it is.
It's Republican is what it is. My name is Liz Brown. We'll be back. Stay with me. Don't go nowhere.
The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound. That's the blow. That's the blow made.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. He's heard the calls for his resignation and House Speaker Dennis Hastert says he doesn't know why he keeps hearing them. He says he has not ignored or acted too late. When he learned that former Congressman Mark Foley was sending racy emails to House pages.
I don't know why they didn't come forward earlier with them, because if they had, they would have protected a lot of kids.
The House, meanwhile, may soon act where Foley's concerned.
Sources tell ABC News that House Ethics Committee members are being called back to Washington tomorrow to set in motion an investigation into the congressional page Mark Foley scandal. At the same time, Foley is in an alcohol rehab facility, with his lawyer announcing that Foley is a gay man and that Foley alleges that as a teenager, he was sexually abused by a clergyman. Meanwhile, criticism continues to mount on the House Republican leadership for failing to act sooner on the Foley case.
ABC's Luis Schiavone in Washington. The first funerals for the victims of this week's Amish schoolhouse shooting will be held tomorrow. Police say the gunman, Charles Roberts, had been tortured by memories that he had molested two young relatives years ago and was worried that he would do it again.
Authorities don't believe Roberts sexually molested any of his victims in the schoolhouse before shooting them, but believe he may have intended to, pointing to a checklist they uncovered in the milk truck that he drove for work. On that list, items that could be used to restrain the girls and molest them.
ABC's David Muir in Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania. Iraqi Christians became targets today. 16 people were killed, 87 were hurt in a series of bombings in Baghdad's largest mainly Christian neighborhood. Two more U.S. soldiers, meanwhile, were killed elsewhere in Iraq. The Dow set a record yesterday, so how long till we see a 12,000 close? ABC's Betsy Stark says that depends.
Analysts I'm talking to think this rally has legs. If oil and gas prices stay low, if interest rates don't go up from here, and if corporate profits are as good as we think they'll be, more records could certainly be on the way.
ABC News.
Ever wonder how Columbus felt when he discovered America? Now you can at Lowe's Discover Columbus Day Values Event. Right now, all special order flooring is 20% off. Get a $5 mail-in rebate on 1 gallon or a $20 mail-in rebate on 5 gallons of Olympic Premium paint. Put it all on your Lowe's consumer credit card and ask for 12-month special financing on any purchase of $299 or more now through October 9th. See store for details. Hurry into Lowe's to discover Columbus Day values you won't find anywhere else. Lowe's, let's build something together.
At Romano's Macaroni Grill.
You know how I discover things you guys miss? Exactly. Like this sausage stuffed cannelloni with its layers of flavors. Never had it before, have you?
Well, it's brand new. Italian sausage, homemade meat sauce, melted cheese.
Your pasta Milano? I discovered that.
Tender chicken, garlic cream sauce. I get it here all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a Mac Grill classic.
But I discovered it first. I'm a discoverer. Like Marco Polo.
Well, you're old enough.
From pasta Milano to new sausage stuffed cannelloni, discover the many flavors of Romano's Macaroni Grill.
Other, like son, American Roger Kornberg was awarded this year's Nobel Prize for Chemistry. His father won for medicine in 1959. Most doctors still don't like this idea. Patients trying to save money by buying their drugs in Canada, but now if you do it, at least the feds won't take them away. Here's ABC's Daniela Bellotta.
If you ordered your medications from Canada, you may or may not have gotten them. That's no longer going to be the case. Beginning Monday, U.S. Customs will no longer seize small prescription drug shipments from Canada, which sets price limits as part of its national health system. Ordering meds will still be illegal, but the law will not be enforced. The move ends the controversial practice that began last fall. Since then, the government confiscated or delayed about 40,000 shipments. Daniela Bellotta, ABC News.
Heiress reality TV star, lately singer Paris Hilton filed a police report saying that former Miss USA Shanna Mokler attacked her. Mokler, who's appearing on ABC's Dancing with the Star, filed her own report saying it was Hilton who got physical. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
This hour's WGNU News Update is brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news, doctors from Planned Parenthood of the St. Louis region are undergoing training to learn how to implant a new birth control medication. Mary Kogut, Planned Parenthood's Vice President of Patient Services, says Implanon is a matchstick-sized rod implanted into the woman's arm. It releases a hormone that prevents pregnancy for 3 years.
For implant and for removal, it has to be done by a healthcare provider. And Organon, the company that's produced Implanon, is sponsoring some very specific trainings around the country that are FDA-approved to ensure that all the providers know how to appropriately put it into the woman's arm.
85 Planned Parenthood affiliates across the country are being trained in the insertion and removal of the device. In other news, the park next to the Eagleton Courthouse in downtown St. Louis will soon bear the name of a pioneering federal judge. A bill naming the site the Clyde S. Cahill Memorial Park is awaiting President Bush's signature. Judge Clyde Cahill, a St. Louis native, was the first African-American to serve on the Eighth Circuit Court. He passed away in 2004 at the age of 81. Finally this hour, Steven Jackson is racking up yardage in his fight against childhood obesity. St. Louis Rams running back joined with St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay and others to announce the creation of the Healthy Youth Partnership, or HYPE, program yesterday. The HYPE, H-Y-P program provides ways kids can improve their health through various diet and exercise activities. Visit www.healthyyouthpartnership.org for more information. And that's this hour's WGNU News Update, brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. Is it time for new shocks and struts? This month at Napa, you can get mail-in rebates of up to $60 on the purchase of Napa SensaTrac and Reflex shocks and struts. Napa, get the good stuff. I'm Peyton Colston, reporting WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the NHL on Center Ice. Eastbound 44 at Antire and Bowles, traffic is easing after an earlier accident. Westbound 5570 at Poplar Street Bridge, look for an accident on the Missouri end of the bridge, and it's blocking the exit ramp 244. Northbound 170 at Galleria Parkway and Olive, look for everything to be easing. Other than that, there's a number of construction projects going on in and around the St. Louis metropolitan area, St. Charles County, and Metro East area. So just use caution and slow down through those work zones. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the NHL on Center Ice. The NHL is back. Get NHL Center Ice, where you can watch over 40 games a week, many in HD. Call your cable or satellite provider today. NHL Center Ice, game on. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. Partly sunny this morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day. 40% chance of showers this afternoon with a high in the mid-80s. This evening, mostly cloudy, cooler with a low in the mid-50s. For Thursday, mostly cloudy in the morning, becoming partly sunny throughout the day. Cooler, however, with a high only in the upper 60s. And for Friday, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 70s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 74 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 75. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's another great interview with Liz. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can I stand? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can I stand? To you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound that's below that the below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can
you stand? But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city. Splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much business to talk about. This Mark Foley, congressman, former congressman, Mark Foley issue has been, as it should be, front pages, front part of people's minds as we discuss the state of politics that we find ourselves in. In October 2006, just weeks away from the midterm election. And we need to discuss this issue as disgusting as it is. And one of the ways that we have yet to talk about this story is from the perspective of the interns, the pages. A question that needs to be asked is why some of the former pages still won't speak publicly. I'm not talking about the ones that were actually victims of the perversion of Mark Foley, but the ones that knew about it. Why won't they speak about it? Well, to talk about that, and to talk about the article that he wrote on that very topic, joining us from Arlington, Virginia, Robert Perry, author of Secrecy and Privilege, Rise of the Bush Dynasty from Watergate to Iraq. Robert Perry is also the author of this new article, Why Capital Pages Fear Retaliation. Robert, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Very good. Why Capital Pages Fear Retaliation?
Simple answer. What is it?
Well, it seems the Pages did learn some lessons while spending time on Capitol Hill. Their parents often, for generations, sent bright young kids to Washington to sort of see politics up close and to get the real-world sense of it. And I think one of the things that they came away with from reflecting this era in particular is that if you get in the way of powerful people, you can face career damage even before your career may start. In this case, some of the Pages have said they don't want to speak because they hope to have careers in politics, and they feel that if they are seen as criticizing powerful people or if they cause political trouble, that they can see their futures snuffed out before they begin. And one has to say it's not an irrational fear in Washington these days because of the truly vicious quality of so much of the political discourse where...
Well, and before we get into the specifics of what leads them to that conclusion, is it remarkable that we're having 16-year-olds considering that now? And is that a reflection of how bad it is in Hollywood? In Washington, I suppose. In Washington, or is it a reflection of the sophistication of 16-year-olds in 2006?
Well, probably a combination. I think, though, that there's a sense that that if you get on the wrong side of people, you can be blacklisted. We've seen cases where people have gotten jobs by key jobs because they went down in Florida and helped the Republicans fight the recount, and they've been rewarded. And conversely, people that have gotten in the way of this power structure have ended up facing career damage, as we've seen, say, in the case of Valerie Plame and Ambassador Wilson. So you have some real examples of kids looking at the world that they're immersed in Washington and seeing that you don't help yourself by just telling the truth and standing up to power. You basically get in trouble.
And they don't have to go back to ancient history to find examples of that. When we come back, Robert Perry, I'd like to talk about the politics of fear in Washington. Robert Perry is joining me. He's the editor of ConsortiumNews.com and the author of the book Secrecy and Privilege, Rise of the Bush Dynasty from Watergate to Iraq. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me. I'll be back with more of my discussion with Robert Perry.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Stem cell research could save the lives of many babies who have diseases that currently cannot be cured.
Speaking about Amendment 2, Missouri pediatrician Dr. Sessions Cole, director of newborn medicine at Washington University School of Medicine and St. Louis Children's Hospital.
As director of newborn medicine, I urge a yes vote on the stem cell initiative. Opponents make claims I know are not true. The stem cell initiative strictly bans human cloning. It's not about cloning, it's about cures.
A yes vote on Amendment 2 is endorsed by the Missouri State Medical Association, which represents over 6,000 physicians throughout the state, and by over 100 other nonprofit patient and medical groups. Join them in voting yes on 2.
it could save the life of someone you love.
This voter information paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. Sandra Ost, Treasurer.
Hi, I'm Randy Grimm. Join me Fridays at 12 noon for Animal Tales on AM 920 WGNU. I learned at an early age that animals matter to me. Every week, we'll share your stories. We'll discuss issues that matter most to you and your companion animals, from breed-specific laws to puppy mills, and answer your questions about pet care as well. You'll also enjoy our special guests as they share their tales. It's an hour of fur, friends, and fun every week. Join me, Randy Grimm, for Animal Tales, every Friday at 12 noon on AM 920 WGNU. Woof.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Make me want to holla. This is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call, and my guest this hour is Robert Perry. He's the editor of ConsortiumNews.com and author of Secrecy and Privilege, Rise of the Bush Dynasty from Watergate to Iraq, and he's joining us from Arlington, Virginia. And Robert, we're talking about this Mark Foley case and why some of the interns, even the interns that weren't the subject of Mark Foley's predatory actions, but they knew about it, their unwillingness to speak of this fear, this atmosphere of fear in Washington, D.C. Can we talk about this?
Yeah, sure. I think what we've seen in Washington over the years has been this buildup of vicious attack apparatus, which just goes after people when they get in someone's way. I mean, it's almost become the way of discourse in Washington. You know, there used to be a time when I first came here in the 70s even, where there was much more collegiality, a much more reasoned debate, where both sides really tried much more to achieve results for the benefit of the American people. And then we had, of course, the arrival of people like Newt Gingrich in the late 70s who thought that the way to really change things was to be much more vicious and aggressive and smash the system, in effect. Sort of, they call themselves revolutionaries. And that tone has sort of developed and grown over the years, and now we have essentially a one-party system in Washington, with the Republicans control both houses of Congress, the White House, and the Supreme Court, and have a lot of the media under their at least sympathetic. So you have this capacity to bring down this kind of fierce attack on people, which really has intimidated people. And you have, whether it be politicians or citizens, it tends to happen. You see, for instance, when in the run up to the war in Iraq, instead of having a reasoned debate about the merits or demerits of invading Iraq, we had effectively a war fever. And when Al Gore, for instance, in September of 2002, gave a very reasoned speech questioning the idea of preemptive war, he was aggressively attacked across the board, not just from the right, but also from the mainstream. The Washington Post ran op-ed articles denouncing Gore. We saw the same happen with people like Scott Ritter.
And can we back up just a second? Because I really want people to feel the specificness of this attack. It's not, you're not saying that Al Gore was attacked just to use the word attack, but there were some very specific, extraordinary statements made about the former vice president of the United States.
Right. He was portrayed as deranged and bitter. And, you know, it wasn't a matter of saying, listen, I disagree with Gore's position because this or that. It was an attack on him as a human being.
The Republican National Committee spokesman Jim Dyke said he was a political hack.
Right, and that was sort of one of the milder things said about him. If you read some of in the article on at Consortium News, I go through some of the quotes that were directed at Gore. But then we saw it with even just citizens, people like when the Dixie Chicks criticized George Bush in his rush to war, while in a concert tour,
And what did they? And what did they say?
I think one of the singers, I think her name is Maines, made a comment that she felt that she was embarrassed to have Bush come from Texas, as she's from Texas, and she questioned his whether he really was listening to the people of the world on the issue of going to war. And the Dixie Chicks did not just suffer from people saying, "Do we disagree with that? We think it's inappropriate." It became a case of boycotting their music, threatening radio stations that played their music. The lead singer even had to perform under death threats in one case. So there was this really aggressive effort to sort of silence people and intimidate people. We saw it with Scott Ritter, who was a former inspector on WMD issues in Iraq. And when he questioned the evidence on the WMD, it wasn't just a matter of, well, what's the evidence, how well does it weigh? It became he was a traitor, he must be in Saddam's payroll, and so forth. There was this ugliness and cruelty, which some people say, well, that's just politics, that's how it is. It's not how a healthy democracy functions, frankly. But beyond that,
and can I just interrupt for another second, Robert? You also talking about going back to the Dixie Chicks, and you talking about the criticism and the death threats that they got that go beyond just a general discourse and disagreement about policy. In your article, "Why Capital Pages Fear Retaliation," you say that Tom Brokaw asked Bush about the boycott of the Dixie Chicks, and coming from the mouth of the person that's sitting in the White House, his words were very chilling. Can you share with us what he said?
Well, I don't have the quote right in front of me, but he basically said that they have their right to make their comments, and people who disagree with them have the right to do what they want to do.
But let me give the specific quote that you have in the article, because that's what really chilled me to the bone. He says that the singers can say what they want to say, but his supporters had an equal right to punish the singers for their comments.
Right, and that's sort of it's a view that is really not appropriate coming from a president of the United States or for any powerful politician.
To punish someone.
In democracy, you're supposed to encourage debate, because out of debate comes wise decision-making. It's not just that, but here it's treated like anyone who disagrees with him must be destroyed.
And the president is co-signing on punishing those that disagree with us.
Well, he didn't use the word punish. That was my characterization of it. But he does go on and say that I think he says freedom of speech is a two-way street. That they can say what they want, and my people can do what they want, and so it becomes a case of trying to essentially destroy people's careers or damage them for simply disagreeing with people in power. And there's something fundamentally wrong with that. If you want to have a healthy democracy, it goes beyond just the give and take of politics. It goes to the point of powerful people trying to intimidate dissent. And that is not just a problem in sort of an esoteric way. As we've seen with the Iraq War, it becomes a life and death issue, because if politicians can silence debate and essentially railroad the country in a certain direction, then you have a lot of American soldiers dying, you have a lot of people in the region of the Middle East dying. You have real consequences that are extremely damaging, and they really date back to the failure, the refusal, really, on the part of people in power to allow a thorough, fair debate in Washington about the merits of the war. And that sort of attitude was certainly picked up by the pages, who when they were being subjected to these intrusive emails from Congressman Foley, were saying they didn't want to speak about it because they felt it would damage their future career prospects. They felt they'd be blacklisted for basically reporting this predatory behavior of a person they saw as a powerful congressman.
And in terms of what causes or what allows for a reasoned debate and a collective debate on these issues, what role do you see of the Democrats playing in this? Do we see that there is anybody on the other side of this trying to make these reasoned have these reasoned discussions?
Well, I think the Democrats have essentially succumbed to this sort of this attack apparatus. Basically, the Democratic approach is to try to triangulate, with, as we know, sort of the famous Clinton concept. That is, they sort of make a judgment as to where the power is, and they try to position themselves to between what they may really believe and what they feel will get them in trouble and try to get a position that won't cause them too much trouble. So I think we haven't seen a very strong resistance from the Democrats to this development because, in a way, they've been targeted by it, too. And they know that if say, like Al Gore, if you came out and spoke against the war in Iraq in a clear and impassioned way, you could expect to be treated like a nutcase.
And can I share the quote from Washington Post columnist Michael Kelly about Gore's speech?
Sure.
Because it's breathtaking. And I quote, Al Gore's article was dishonest, cheap, low. It was hollow. It was bereft of policy, of solutions, of constructive ideas, very nearly of facts, bereft of anything other than taunts and jibes and embarrassingly obvious lies. It was breathtakingly hypocritical, a naked political assault delivered in tones of moral condescension from a man pretending to be superior to mere politics. It was wretched. It was vile. It was contemptible. This was not a blogger's comment. This was a column in the Washington Post.
Right. And that was sort of the tone of it all. And basically, Gore's speech was never really even shown to the American people. I mean, he did run on C-SPAN, I think, once, but it was most of you heard about it because it was being attacked so aggressively, and it was not any of those things that Kelly said. It was actually a fairly balanced and passionate argument, which was not acceptable at the time.
We'll be back with our discussion with Robert Perry. He's the editor of ConsortiumNews.com. We're talking about his article, Why Capital Pages Fear Retaliation. This is more on the Mark Foley story. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me. Travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Where else, where else, where else indeed? 3425 Union, 3425 Union. You need to get on down to Sears. Sears, where else? Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, everything that you need to make your house a home, your home a palace. Get on down to Sears. They have tractors. They have leaf mulchers. They have lawn mowers. They have tools beyond belief and description. Get on down to Sears for the best value on tools, the best values on your lawnmower, the best values, period, dot. Sears, 3425 Union, where else?
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Alan Brainerd. Join me Wednesdays at noon for Design 411 on AM 920 WGNU. No matter where you live, no matter what your lifestyle, you'll find out how to turn your ordinary home into an extraordinary home. My guests and I will give you the 411 on everything from classic design to the newest decorating trends. Join me, Alan Brainerd, for Design 411 every Wednesday at noon on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your home.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. I'm having a conversation this hour with Robert Perry. He's the editor of ConsortiumNews.com and author of Secrecy and Privilege, Rise of the Bush Dynasty from Watergate to Iraq. And also he's the author of the article, Why Capital Pages Fear Retaliation. And Robert, in terms of this specific story of Mark Foley and what he has done, Do you think that this story, since it involves sex, that since it involves young people, since it involves what appears to be a cover-up, do you think that this story has the capability of changing any of the other changing what is happening on Capitol Hill? Is this story going to land differently than other stories have about? Because from my perspective, this is also a story of the same story that's been going on in Washington, D.C. under this Republican majority.
Well, there's obviously, when you have a one-party system, you have greater invitations for abuse of power because there are fewer checks and balances. It's not insignificant that the one person who was cut out of the original information last year on this was the Democrat who sat on this committee that protects the pages. I think information is seen as a weapon in Washington now, and so if you keep information away from your adversaries, it's seen as a good thing and helps protect your party rather than being responsible and truthful. And now even the Republican leadership feel they should have handled this differently. But I had dinner over the weekend with a fairly high-ranking Republican operative who was saying that he feels this will cause them trouble in the sense of holding the House. And he wasn't as upset about that as I might have thought. He was saying that many Republicans are disturbed by this arrogance of this leadership and would not mind seeing at least a couple years of Democratic control of the House just to allow a new generation of Republicans to rise to the top. So whether or not if there is an electoral effect of this, if it causes the Republican Party to lose the House, I suppose it could have some effect in the sense of creating more balance in Washington, where power is not concentrated as much, that it's something that where there is at least some check and balance. But I think the point of this, my Republican friend, was that it also might give the Republican Party a chance to sort of look at itself and make some adjustments and be more responsible as they move to the future.
But that certainly has not been translated into a campaign strategy on the part of the Republican Party.
No, I think I think the overall approach has been to try to counterattack. I was on a radio show earlier today on a conservative station, and they were pretty much trying to paint this as some grand conspiracy of the Democrats, in fact, accusing the Democrats of misconduct. They had no evidence, but this is the kind of thing that some of them will want to spread because it will cause confusion among the voters and might allow the Republicans to somehow mitigate the damage and the fallout from the scandal, which was clearly something that happened on their watch, which happened with one of their members, and which was not handled well, even by the standards of, I think, people like Majority Leader Boehner and others. They've been very critical of how this was handled. But there is this effort out there to sort of spin this around and use it as an attack on the Democrats.
But the challenge of doing that is that I think that it's probably easier to do that with the Abramoff, because the Abramoff issue perhaps to some people was too technical or too involved and all of that. This involves sex. This involves text messages that people can – it's kind of like a YouTube issue where the issue is clear right in front of you of who did what.
Well, right. I think there is a lot of concern among parents across the country that their kids might be exposed to the wrong kinds of things on the Internet. So it's a hot-button issue in that sense. And the idea that people, in this case, Republican family, would entrust their sons to through a Republican congressman to the protection of the Capitol Hill authorities and have that abuse be so badly exercised that they would I think this does have the effect of pushing a lot of raising a lot of concerns among American parents.
And it's also a clearer issue for a lot of Americans to wrap their first of all their time around and their attention around and their understanding around.
Yes, this is something they deal with probably themselves when they get home from work after a long day and they want to make sure their kids haven't been going to the wrong kinds of websites. So it's something that is personal with a lot of people, and to think that this has happened is obviously an ugly chapter for the American Congress, and it's one that I think I'm not sure how it plays out over the next several weeks, but it certainly is one that I think people want to see some more answers, and many people on the Republican side as well as the Democratic side would like to see some real accountability for once with this Republican leadership.
In your article, Why Capital Pages Fear Retaliation, you make the point that the strategy of using the power of the media to put fear into people's career instincts and career concerns, you say that it goes back as far as Watergate.
Well, I think, one, if you're tracking this sort of history, it's useful. I do this in Secrecy and Privilege, that to go back and look at where much of this originated. The Republicans felt they had been unfairly treated by the press during Watergate. They also were concerned about the Pentagon Papers and the exposure of the lies that led us into Vietnam. And so there was a sense that the press needed to be sort of reined in. So one of the ways the Republicans approached that, and you see it developing in the late 1970s, was when former Treasury Secretary Bill Simon pulls together a bunch of conservative foundations, people like SCAIFE and others, to start funding a conservative media, what he called essentially a counter-establishment, their own infrastructure. And then more and more money is poured into that over the years. The Washington Times comes online in 1982, paid for by Reverend Moon, who's sort of a right-wing theocrat from Korea. And you have this development of a fairly influential and effective conservative media infrastructure as a counterweight to what they call the liberal media, although having worked in it, it was really more a mainstream media. And so you had this kind of new, and also attack operations were set up against reporters and well-funded to go after mainstream journalists who weren't going along with the acceptable political line of the moment of the 1980s. So this cumulative effect was to start intimidating journalists. And this sort of fear mechanism spread, and obviously politicians were attacked too, and so were citizens. And by the 90s, you have Fox News coming online. So you had this building up of an infrastructure. Limbaugh and the conservative radio stations were very powerful in this as well. So people who got on the wrong side of this machine really saw how their careers could be damaged and destroyed. And that sort of spread fear in Washington that you better not get on the wrong side of this group because they would really take you out. And there have been plenty of examples. I go through some of them of people whose careers were destroyed and taken out. So the message became, don't offend those folks. Stay on the right side of them. And I think that has led over time to this kind of situation where some on the right and the Republican establishment feel they can bully people. It's worked for a long time, and I think they see it still working. The problem becomes for the American people is when you have a government functioning this way, you end up with bad decision making because power is not being checked, arguments are not being tested. People are simply giving up, you know, trying to avoid being attacked, so they don't really make the arguments they should. And we end up with situations like Iraq. And these are like logical conclusions. It was also, there was also the decision in the 1970s and early 80s to go after the CIA analytical division, which I also describe in Secrecy and Privilege. And the idea was if you could intimidate the analysts at CIA to sort of give you the intelligence you wanted, then you could use that as a way to say, see, I'm right. But what happened was the politicized process ended up with analysts either being fired if they told the truth or rewarded if they basically went along. And again, you end up with situations where the U.S. government is basing its decisions on bad intelligence. And that also leads you to situations like Iraq. So we had essentially a polluting of the entire information structure.
And it didn't. And it didn't start with the election of George W. Bush.
Oh no, it started way, way, way earlier. And we can trace the history. It's a very interesting history to follow, and to show how it evolved, the kinds of methods used. The Washington Times, for instance, was used very effectively to put out sort of propaganda themes at key moments during presidential campaigns. In '88, they put out information about Dukakis being psychiatrically unsound. Turned out not to be true, but was very effective in putting doubts about Dukakis into play. In 92, the Washington Times put out a story about how Bill Clinton was a KGB agent, which turned out not to be true either, but it raised doubts and concerns about him. And so, in 2000, there were similar attacks on Al Gore about his honesty when, in fact, these were essentially created kinds of allegations. The whole thing about him, you know, saying he invented the Internet when he never even said it. But, I mean, there were these efforts to sort of put in play propaganda themes that damage their political opponents, and often doing it at very sensitive times, especially before elections. And so you have this—you have people trying to deal with that reality, and often the way the Democrats have dealt with it is to try to finesse it, say nothing controversial, And we've seen the results of that.
Mm.
So the bigger question is how does a country as important and great as the United States overcome this? How do we sort of reorder this system so it allows for debate, allows for fuller discussion of the facts?
Do you see the internet as contributing to that? The bloggers out here as helping bring things back?
Well, I've been doing things with the internet really since 1995. Consortiumnews.com was like the first investigative magazine on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and I would never overstate its influence. It can be a help. There are negatives about the internet. There are positives. Overall, I think it's a net positive, but I think it's not by itself going to change things. I think there has to be a lot of commitment, radio stations like yours, to sort of get information out that is more honest and balanced and reflective of the American need of knowing what we're doing in the world and how it can be improved.
But, Robert, do those of us on the left, progressives, people that are interested in putting the truth out the balance of the issues out here, do we have to come up with things like public diplomacy? Do we have to put together our think tanks and our infrastructure to counter what is out there right now? Is that the answer?
Well, first, I don't count myself as a liberal or progressive. I'm mm-hmm. a reporter, but I do think that it's necessary to have more balance in the American political system, which
mm-hmm.
means, yes, there has to be an infrastructure on the left that balances the infrastructure on the right, which might allow more of us to do our jobs and just tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to take another break. I'm Liz Brown. I'm talking to Robert Perry. He's the editor of ConsortiumNews.com, and he's joining us this morning from Arlington, Virginia. He's also the author of the article, Why Capital Pages Fear Retaliation, and that's coming out of the Mark Foley story. Stay with me.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal, work, or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen letting you know my show will be on every Thursday from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Yeah, I'll make you think. You may find yourself saying, oh my God, it burns, it burns. It only hurt for a minute. See you then.
Everything the engineer would move when the engineer wanted a bite to eat.
Up next, Sort It Out with Lori
and Claire,
helping you find the courage to make a change in your life on AM 920 WGNU.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. My guest this hour is Robert Perry. He's the editor of ConsortiumNews.com, and he's also the author of Secrecy and Privilege, and he's joining us from Arlington, Virginia. And Robert, can out of this article of that you wrote, Why Capital Pages Fear Retaliation. You talk about what happened during the 80s to create this climate, this culture of fear, and doing something that's going to impact your career. Talk to us about what happened when Reagan was shepherded in.
Well, when Reagan became president, the momentum for this effort really grew. It had begun really in the 70s when Carter was president, but it really took off when Reagan became president. And there developed, especially around issues like the Central America wars, this idea of using public diplomacy. And actually, there's a phrase that some of the neocons in the Reagan administration like to say, which was perception management. The idea was if they could manage the perceptions of the American people about an issue, say, in Central America, they could get the American people to be scared, they could get them to react in certain ways. So there became this sort of idea, this concept, which we see really coming up with as the neoconservatives are just beginning to rise at this point. This is the Elliot Abramses and the Paul Wolfowitzes and these folks who are really being credentialed during the Reagan period. They also believe they're very smart guys, and they believe that the American people aren't, and that they need to be sort of led and essentially manipulated. So this idea of perception management grew. And that became sort of a coordinated effort. You'd have, people in government, targeting certain journalists. There was a group called the Public Diplomacy Office at State, and it sent around teams of specialists who would go lobby your editor or your bureau chief to try to get you fired or reassigned if you were writing stories they didn't fit with the themes they wanted promoted. And so there was this idea that you could essentially change what the American people were hearing through both putting out their own propaganda and also trying to intimidate people who might question the propaganda.
Well, talk to us about Raymond Bonner.
Well, Ray Bonner was the New York Times correspondent in Central America at the time. And he wrote some very courageous stories about the death squad activity that was going on in El Salvador. It was also happening, of course, in Guatemala and other places. And this was not what the Reagan administration wanted to have the American people hear. They wanted the Reagan administration wanted the American people to think that these were just lies and disinformation, and needed to be stepped on. There was one point when Reagan had to sort of certify that the Salvadoran military was respecting human rights, and Bonner had very courageously investigated a massacre that the Salvadoran military had committed in a town called El Mazote. And so when that story appeared on the front page of the New York Times, there was a real concerted effort to destroy Bonner's reputation. He was attacked for, first of all, the facts were attacked, very similar to what you see these days, where there's quibbling about facts, there's attacks on someone's objectivity and professionalism, and it was over time these attacks just kept building, and eventually they were effective. And the New York Times withdrew Bonner from Central America and gave him some job, and essentially forced him out of the New York Times. So he quit. And that example, which was really repeated over and over and over again in less notable ways, became what caused American journalists not to want to dig into these things. And one of the reasons the Iran-Contra scandal took so long to come out, and that's what I was directly involved in working on, as you know, it was mostly because the reporters were so afraid that they would be given the Bonner treatment that they looked the other way. So even when Ollie North was doing these remarkable things behind the scenes, and those were pretty much open secrets in a way in Washington, a lot of major journalists at the New York Times and the Washington Post refused to really deal with them, because they knew it would be a career killer. And that's why at AP we did a lot of that early work, because we were not as much on there on the center of the radar scopes as, say, the Post or the Times would have been.
And then there was another fallout to this, or I guess from their perspective, another positive consequence of this strategy. When Clinton took office, the same reporters that were trying to write articles that pleased the folks on the right took extra effort to go after Bill Clinton because they wanted to show that they could be tough on him.
Right. You know, the machine that was put in place by the conservatives to essentially protect Reagan and then later senior Bush was mostly a defensive. It was set up as a defensive mechanism because it came out of Watergate, the idea that they could not defend Nixon. So they created a mechanism to defend Republican presidents. But when Clinton came in, it just flipped from being defensive to offensive. And so while it was going after Clinton in very aggressive ways, trying to dig into some of these so-called Clinton scandals, the mainstream press saw an opportunity, and I've talked to many of these journalists, to sort of show they could be tougher on a Democrat than on a Republican. And this is what they thought would buy them space and buy them some protection from these attacks from the right. So you saw this sort of over-the-top effort to investigate rather petty scandals involving Clinton that mainstream reporters engaged in to sort of essentially give themselves some protection.
Or cred.
Cred with the right, if you will. So that, and that became a way for reporters not acting the way they should. Reporters should be equal opportunity abusers, if you will. They should be tough on everybody, and they should be equally tough on everybody. So but to sort of let one side sort of off because you're afraid of them and then pound on another because you're not afraid of them is not good journalism.
But also, if you're pounding on them to think that you're creating some space for yourself, because some of this is self-serving, you guys are not going to be that hard on me or mean to me if I go after Bill Clinton like that.
Right.
At what point does the learning curve kick in? That Bill Clinton apparently still hasn't learned that being nice to them doesn't change their modus operandi on him. Have the reporters learned that?
Well, I think the reporters are now somewhat ashamed for what they did in the run up to the war in Iraq. I think you had, the New York Times in 2002, the Washington Post too, major papers had essentially bought into the propaganda, and this was a way for them to protect themselves from attack. They weren't going to be accused of being, pro-Saddam or whatever, pro-terrorist or whatever. So they were going to be tough. They were going to side with the president. It bought them protection and it bought them cred, if you will. But it was also, it was horribly wrong for the American people. And the consequences are 2,700 American dead soldiers. So I think some of these reporters who went along with that, and I would include Bob Woodward, by the way, in this mix, are now having second thoughts. I mean, they're not exactly beating themselves on the head for what they did, but I think they're showing a more of a skeptical approach than they did. So I think implicitly they're indicating that they realize that they should have been more professional, more even-handed, more balanced in 2002 and 2003.
And I guess the point that I was trying to make is that if they were trying to protect themselves from attack, there is no protection.
No, there really isn't. I mean, there really isn't. I think that was one of the things, going back to Bill Clinton quickly, when he took office in early 1993, there were several important investigations still pending about the Reagan-Bush years. The Iran-Contra scandal was still alive. Lawrence Walsh, the special prosecutor, was still trying to investigate even what George Bush Sr. had done. He wanted to have a new grand jury. There was the October surprise issue, whether the Iran-Contra thing really dated back to 1980 before the Republicans even got power when they were dealing with the Iranians. There was the Iraqgate story, which was the secret funding and arming of Saddam Hussein during the Iran-Iraq war. These were big stories, very important to today, by the way, because these are the countries we're still confronting. But Bill Clinton and the Democrats chose to essentially sweep those under the rug as sort of almost a sign that they wanted to be bipartisan. They wanted to show this kind of generosity. And they thought that by doing so, the Republicans would be nice, that the Republicans would be more bipartisan when it came to Clinton's budget or his health care plan.
How'd that work out for Bill Clinton?
It didn't work out really very well because that wasn't how the Republicans were thinking and operating. They were going to be tough. They were going to fight. And Clinton essentially, now he helped cover up the history, but he opened himself to even more, easier attack by the Republicans.
I mean, if you're looking at this from the art of war or just from the strategical place, you've shown your opponent that you're weak.
Right, and the Republicans then seized on everything, and they discredited people who had tried to tell the truth about some of those Iraq and Iran scandals of the 1980s. Even Judge Walsh, who was a Republican, took a pounding for trying to hold the Reagan-Bush crowd accountable, and so it didn't help. Basically, it hurt a lot of honest people who had tried to do the right thing, and it didn't buy Bill Clinton the sort of the some kind of benefit from the Republicans that he had expected. Mm. So it was a lose-lose. It was the wrong thing to do and the stupid thing to do.
And one more layer of penetration that this machine has gotten to is the world of academia.
Right. Now the conservatives are trying to replicate what they did with the press on academia. There was a group, you know, they even follows to the point that there was a group called Accuracy in Media, and that was this right-wing group that Reid Irvine had put together. And others have sort of, there have been others that have sprung off from that, as Brent Bazell. There are a number of these attack groups that go after journalists. And that was so effectively intimidating journalists and getting either, you know, people that were in the way fired or getting people who might have written something not to write things because they didn't want to get in trouble, that's now being applied to academia. And the group now is called Accuracy in Academia. And the conservatives see the academic world as sort of the last bastion of sort of liberalism. So they want to go in there and sort of punish the academics much the way they punish the journalists. This is not the way a normal democracy functions, I should say.
And in terms of their effectiveness of penetrating that world, how effective have they been?
It's going to be harder. I think they've had some effect. They've scared a number of academics, but I think it's going to be it's a much bigger universe.
And also, there's this thing called tenure as well.
There's tenure, but the world of Washington journalism is very small.
Mm.
You can target a relatively handful of people, and you can send a message.
Ah.
It's much tougher, I think, when you're dealing with all the academics around the country.
Very good. Robert Perry, editor of ConsortiumNews.com. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
Take care. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay with me. Until then.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. Your progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air from the brothers.
The hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.